No, I'm looking at some models now. No, I think they're dog shit.
Good evening, and welcome to the Tiny Plastic People podcast, the podcast of tinyplasticpeople.com. Joining me tonight is Rich.
Hello.
And Nick.
Hello.
And as I often am, I'm Drew. Nick, I think this is the first time you've been on a full podcast. You've been on a special before, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I was on the 40K special, kind of unleashing my hose of uninformed opinions at the internet. And that's what you need on any podcast, really. So presumably that's why I'm back.
Sounds
beard,
I mean,
check. White, check. 30s, check.
Not check.
Oh, what?
Not yet.
Young boy? What the
That's fuck? Right. Well, it's, that was it. They wanted some young blood on the pod.
It's our Zoomer content, so we can find out what the kids are up to. So, excellent. I'm glad. Glad we know what's going on. Well, we can find out what's going on with...
Can you tear your eyes off of the Fortnite window for long enough to record the pod, do you think? Or?
Absolutely not. No.
I was gonna say Pokemon, and that shows how out of touch I am, because that's what I consider young people to be into. Circa 2000.
That's what my generation is still into, I think. So
yeah.
It's good. It's good. When you're so out of touch, you can't make an out of touch joke. That's peak. Seeing as you're joining us sort of formally then, for the first time, Nick, do you want to give a bit of an introduction about yourself in whatever level of detail you feel is appropriate?
For the internet, yeah, absolutely. My name is Nick, pronouns he and him. I am an archaeologist, allegedly, despite the best efforts of lots of people. I have been back in the hobby, probably it was a lockdown thing for me, really. I was hobby curious, shall we say, kind of late 2019, 2020. And then lockdown really gave me the impetus to pick some stuff up and crack on with it. And like many people, into it as a teen, Warhammer Fantasy Battles in particular, and a little bit of the Middle-earth strategy battle game. So coming back into the hobby, Age of Sigmar was my kind of big intro, and really that is where the majority of my interest lies. I collect Caradon Overlords because I love steampunk and capitalism, both equally unproblematic. And I also have started to branch out a little bit. So I've got Combat Patrol for the Leagues of Votan for 40K. And for more uninformed opinions about that, you can listen to our pod special for the 10th edition 40K launch. And I also now own a little bit of Warmaster 2, which I'm sure we'll get into in the podcast.
Good stuff. I think maybe to take our hottest and most topical takes, it'll only be topical depending on how quickly this pod gets edited, but as we are recording, GW did some reveals yesterday. I think maybe we'll just lead in with some hot from the press's takes on what GW have presented, and then we'll move on to a bit of a discussion about what we've been doing in general in hobby. And then finally, as our main features, we've got a bit of discussion on, well, hobby stress and also the sort of general accessibility and sort of usability maybe of historical games. So yeah, before we get onto the meat, let's go in for our starter and say, what did you think about what GW showed us yesterday?
Ooh, there's some good stuff. There's some okay stuff.
That's stuff.
Next.
That's
I think there was lots that I wasn't super bothered by for me, which is good. I loved the two AOS reveals. The named Lord Relictor on Stormdrake Draconeth Dragon. That model is posed super dynamically. It's awesome. Really cool. By far my favourite Stormcrest Dragon so far. And the Kurnoth Hunter on Bug for Sylvaneth. Also cool. There's the next Dawnbringers book, which is unsurprising. I absolutely don't care. I'm sure people that enjoy books will be excited by that.
It'll be exciting for your next Age of Sigmar podcast that you do as well, where you could just be like, I still don't care.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm very anti having to buy books for a game at all. I can just about justify battle tomes, so yeah, there's stuff like the Dawn. I'm basically just not the person it's aimed at, and it's fine that it exists. God, what a mature opinion.
Less of this sort of thing.
I'm not going to have like a in-depth opinion on everything, I don't think. But the Bretonnian segment about the old world has got me eyebrow raising a little bit.
In what way?
I didn't really think that I was into Bretonnians.
That kind of eyebrow raising.
So, for me, fantasy, Warhammer fantasy, the old world, whatever you want to call it now, is the nostalgia around it is purely like gawping at things in catalogues, because I never played the game. I owned maybe like one or two Empire kits as a kid. Like, I think I owned a warrior priest and a mounted wizard and maybe one unit of state troops or something. Absolutely never played the game. So I am sort of like tentatively interested in it as an opportunity to try it. And as an opportunity to do that, like, rank and flank hobby project. But so the Bretonnian stuff look cool. I'd like to know, continue to bang the drum of, I don't want to know about the army. I want to know what the product is, like what the game is.
Mm.
And they have now said it's coming as one of the first releases of 2024. So that's maybe a slightly closer timeline than I was expecting. Like, they might get me with it, is basically the short answer. They might get some money out of me. We'll see.
So for you, you're kind of saying that it's more about the rules and how the game plays than necessarily like any particular faction or aesthetic.
Like friend of the pod, Pete, I would have loved Vampire Counts to be on the like big supported factions list. They're not. They're going to get like legacy rules.
Oh, are they not?
Okay. No, so they're not on the short list of stuff that is getting redone plastic kits from the past plus some new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They will get rules, but you know, who's to say they might not get some like made to order stuff, but they're not going to get like a release, inverted commas. Whereas obviously I think we can see more clearly for the Bretonnians now that certainly when it launches there's going to be like a couple of new plastic things, some new resin characters, a few old plastic kits and a few old metal kits reworked, they said, in Forge World resin. So which I think, looking at that trebuchet, just the thought of not having to build it in metal is very pleasing. So having seen those fall apart in real time on tables before. I still just want to know more about like the product, but it's very nice to see some of those sort of models from the catalogue, flipping child of my youth, painted by the current like Specialist Games Heavy Metal team.
Mm-hmm.
And looking kind of the best they can. And there's a notable gulf between like the new Knights of the Realm on foot and the old plastic mounted ones, but they're still all going to look good, kind of all smushed together. So there you go. There's my hot takes on the entire reveal. Someone else talk, please.
I think I probably fall into a broadly similar thing with you, where I'm like, lots of this stuff is cool. I don't think there's anything that's necessarily danger zone for me. One thing, I'm maybe a bit hotter on the book for AOS, the Dawnbringer series, than you are. Not because I necessarily think that... not because I necessarily love having to buy lots of books or anything. But more because I'm intrigued by the Armies of Renown for Stormcast, which is basically another crack at the Dragon Army archetype, which is something they've kind of taken a few punts at, and I'm not sure they've ever stuck the landing, because the problem, as I understand it, with Stormcast Dragons currently is just that they're very good at pretty much everything. They're quite tough, they're very fast, they can put out a lot of mortal wounds, which bypasses most armor saves, and then they can also smack you in the face quite effectively as well. So they kind of infamously, was it pre-release or was it just immediately post-release, they got like quite a significant points bump.
It was like the classic FAQ timing, like, yeah, 2 or 3 weeks. So
yeah,
they were very, very good. They're sort of okay now as an archetype. It's an archetype you still see, but
yeah, yeah,
you also see like Vindictor spam and various other Stormcast things as well. Like, so they're not. They sort of, like, maybe nerfed it into a place where it needed to be, where it wasn't the only option you should take. So I'm interested to see what they do in this Army of Renown that hopefully makes it interesting, but not just up-powers it again.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I'm curious to see what direction they take it in. And then, I've no idea if it's cool or not, but Fire Slayers, well, sorry, I am sure it's very cool. I've no idea if it's good, but I like that you can hitch a lift on a Magmadroth now. Get on the Magmadroth bus. That's always fun. That is cute. Really, really like the new Kurnoth for Sylvaneth. It's great to see more big bugs, because I've only got Elariel's big bug currently. They've got the flying ones, but they don't necessarily have that same sense of like heft.
Yeah.
Somewhere between like a rhino and a, you know, fucking... whatever it's called from Pokemon. You've put Pokemon in my head now. Now that's all I can think of.
It's because you're a kid. And
That's right, yeah, because I'm a youth.
It's because you're a kid.
I've binned my yo-yos now. They're trash to me. Pokemon's where it's at. Yeah. The kill team, I don't know. I'm not, as I've said many times, I'm not really a 40k person. But nothing seemed super inspiring about either of those kill teams to me. I'm sure that Eldar likers and Marine likers will be pleased, but the sculpts were just fine. They're good. They're like the kind of modern standard of GW sculpt. They look pretty, but they didn't seem to be doing anything super impressive. There wasn't anything there that I was like blown away by in terms of what it's achieving. Though I will say that the new waterboard for it is very, very cool. Someone's clearly been watching Andor. And it looks great. I love a gantry. Big gantry fan over here. Love to push people off into the ocean as well.
It's nice to have sort of cool interactive scenery like that. I do think it looks a bit odd, maybe just in the way that they've laid it out in the photos to spread it across that whole board. It's just like lots of little towers.
Yeah.
But I think you could make a very cool gantry complex with that. And also almost anyone who owns 40k terrain will have some Sector Mechanica stuff that it can interact with, because it looks like it's all still going to match that. So yeah, it looks pretty cool. I like that they've split the terrain off from the kill team. Sorry, I'm injecting my takes into your segment here.
No, that's all right. I was priming your pump. I was giving you runway to take off. It's in there now.
Yeah, I think that's good. And we've seen it with the recent Warcry box as well, right? Like,
yeah, definitely.
Terrain and a couple of teams brings it sub £100, and then you also get a similarly priced box full of terrain, should you want it.
Yeah,
big brain.
Yeah, and then the old world is not a particular danger zone for me. Having said that, it was like my introduction to the hobby. I am definitely quite clear-eyed about what it was and what it was for me at that point in my life, and I don't know that I'm necessarily keen to return. But I will say, Bretonians have got the finest facial hair of any army so far that I've seen on a tabletop. Some really beautiful moustaches.
Fantastic. I like the old one that looks a bit like a baguette under someone's nose.
Yeah. Is that like the standard bearer? Yeah, it's the Men-at-Arms standard bearer.
Fantastic. Fantastic stuff. How about you, Drew? How you feeling about previews? As maybe someone who is less on the pulse of every single GW release. I don't mean that as a criticism.
Just no, it's true. I only saw it this morning. I hadn't even realised until I was on Instagram. And I was like, oh, that's a weird Mechanicum thing. They're fine. They're models. I have absolutely no thoughts or feelings about them, basically. My only thoughts, I'm trying to think now. I like the fact there was a lady in the new Bretonnian Foot Knights. I thought,
yeah, good. I spotted that. That's nice.
But I mostly thought, I bet that will upset someone, and then chuckle to myself because the people who don't like women existing in the old world deserve to be upset. So, yeah, and that made me happy. The Pegasus Knights looked as rough as hell because I'd forgotten they were new kits. And I was scrolling down, I was like, oh, lovely new big Pegasus, lovely new Foot Knights. And like, Jesus Christ, those things look bad. And I was like, they'll be the old kits, won't they? Little.
Sometimes you've just got to have a flying stand inserted into your belly, right? Like, while you just sort of awkwardly hover.
Yeah, I did wonder if they were like the Warmaster ones that had accidentally photographed instead, but no.
Oh, damning. Damning.
Zing, there it is.
I can just scroll up and down. Even the old, is the Knights of the Realm kit, is that an old kit?
Knights of the Realm on horse, yes.
Yeah, that just looks way better. Maybe back in 2000, we didn't have the technology to make horses fly properly in those days. Yeah. They look weird. So yeah, that was it. I think that's my only takes. I was disturbed that the Handmaiden of the Lady is a resin model, because I was like, damn, those are some thin flowers that are holding her onto her base as she like hovers above
she's
it.
She's gonna bend. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just snap off. It's
very important that you do not leave your Handmaiden in a hot car.
Yeah. Or
you have to crack the window.
Yeah. So actually she's holding her staff up as well to make herself even longer and even more breakable. Just yeah. So yeah, no, and then there was some other stuff. I appreciate that three of the whatever Raven Guard scouts are people of colour, which again makes me chuckle because I know it'll annoy racists on the internet who like to have Raven Guard as their white power dream boy fantasy chapter. So
oh yeah. Gotta love the no, they must be ashen pale.
Because that's the thing, it's like they're painters, people of colour, with a weird skin tone as well. So it isn't just we are ignoring the lore. It's like, no, it's still there. It's just
they're good, them heavy metal painters, it turns out.
Yeah, and they're thinking about it. They're clearly thinking about it, which is, I think, action always speaks louder than words. So I appreciate that. Yeah. And then everything else I didn't give any monkeys about. I didn't love the dragon with the man on its back. I thought the wings looked weird, but that was...
you're wrong.
I'm wrong, yeah. I'm exactly.
Right, 2 out of 3 podcasters believe that you are correct.
Well, you know what they say, Drew? More dragon for me.
Yeah. I mean, the chance of me... No, I was going to say chance of me painting it's pretty low, but it is actually a big Age of Sigmar monster, and I do quite like painting big Age of Sigmar monsters because they get cool kits. I'm looking at it now. I just don't like the wings. I don't see biologically what action that creature is doing to have the wings in that pose.
I like that it's arching its back like a cat doing a big stretch.
Yeah, I feel like the wings should be the other way around then, and it's sort of... Yeah, if it's unperching, I suppose, and stretching, that would make kind of sense.
Yeah, I assume it's like mid-leap is how I interpret it.
Yeah,
well, maybe it's like just landed or something.
I'd look better
sometimes
in the 360s.
Sometimes it makes more sense when you rotate it, yeah. Cool, though. Relict gets a horse now.
Yeah.
That's always good news.
Did you say he was a special relictor as well? He's like got a...
It's... Ionis Cryptborn.
Close to Barry Skulls.
Barry Skulls, yeah. He is from like the original Hammers of Sigmar lore at like, the start of AOS, apparently.
Right.
So.
Okay. So it is a one-off character. There's not a generic version of...
They haven't said there is. Who knows? I think most of the time these days when they introduce new named characters, they are at least not giving them specific Stormhost keywords or making it so it doesn't break your allegiance. So space for him in an army either way.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, that was my thoughts, I guess, which are very, very limited, very lukewarm. But
well, that seems like about the amount of takes that people would want from us. So not like a 4-hour breakdown pod of us telling you why everything is wrong or right, maybe.
Maybe we should comment on whether they'll be good on the table or not based on absolutely nothing other than a picture.
That dragon's got a very big mouth.
Yeah. So. The Mechanicum person, probably overpowered. I think they should nerf it for no reason other than to make myself angry preemptively. It's got a gun.
It's too powerful. It must be stopped. As a person who habitually snaps models, that Admech character fills me with fear. Not that it's a model I will probably build or paint, but oh god, those are some skinny legs.
They are. Although, and he's got like a weird exhaust hanging down between his legs too.
Maybe it'll be fine. The design team are quite good at making things more structurally sound than they look like they might be. So I'd say in recent kits they are.
I can't remember what it's called. What's the lizard with the big stick?
Oh, apart from that astrolith that you kept breaking, yeah.
Yeah. So, I've definitely had a moment of, fuck you, GW. Calm the fuck down.
I imagine the conversion potential, though, for having man on stilts held up by two lizards.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Incredible. I mean, you're going to have a lot of spare lizards not holding a big banner, because that's what that
could be. A really cool counts as the Free Guild general on the back of the ogre. Yeah. You could have him on stilts held up by some lizards instead. Yeah. Oh, no. Army this way comes.
I'm going to take the opportunity to segue into what hobby we've been doing. I feel like I should probably start, seeing as I was talking about painting a lizard, so I will.
Yeah.
Painting, I've painted quite a lot of stuff. I think mostly because I haven't been on the pod for ages. But I haven't played a lot. So yeah, painting, I painted was it Astralis Bearer, did you say?
That's the one.
Yeah. So I painted that just for practice because I wanted to paint a lizard. I broke the staff 4 times, I think, whilst painting it, including pinning it twice, where I pinned it once and then it snapped off, and then I took it apart, repinned it with a shorter staff, and then bent that, even with a pin down the middle. So I love it. It's just the idea of like what it's like to play any games with that, and like the idea that you might let a child touch it or have it as a toy.
Toys.
Part of me did wonder whether it's just saying some GW setting people up to have awful tantrums. I mean, either children or grown-up children. I do feel it possibly of, because it's not just a staff, it's a staff with like grooves sculpted into it as a kind of break here point. I do wonder whether that was a good idea or not. Certainly if I was like doing another one from scratch, I would just drill it out straight away and put steel all the way through and not just like a paperclip, which is what I did. I'd have gone for something high strength steel or something. But yeah, I painted mine and it gets to go and live in a drawer now.
Presumably quite a tall drawer.
He's on his side, so I mean, if I snap the banner off, so then it would be even easier to fit into all my normal drawers. But no, at the moment, it's on its side. I don't think I've painted much. I have painted stuff, but it's none of it's sort of been finished. It's a lot of painting of 75mm stuff and things, which I've been mucking around with. I've been trying to get my Saga Ancients army finished. Hopefully in time for November when we're supposed to be having a get-together, and I'm going to try and encourage people to play with tiny Republican Robotons and tiny also assholes Carthaginians.
Nice.
So yeah, and then yeah, last weekend, just gone, I was in Spain doing a painting course, which was thoroughly enjoyable. I did one last year. I did it again this year, and yeah, it was a really good time. So it was Sergio Calvo who ran that. He has a studio outside of Madrid. And this was a 3-day painting course with a good mix of people from all over. Well, I say all over Europe, except it was actually some people from outside of Europe as well, so all over the world. And it's kind of nice to meet. And this, I find the social aspect is quite good, because anyone who's willing to travel to Madrid to do a painting course is sort of guaranteed to have interesting opinions, I suppose. Committed.
Certainly got a committed shared interest, right?
That's it, yes, yeah. So, but then, like I said, and then the range of people's skills was really high. There was a couple of people there who were very much just starting out. There was a girl there who's like, it was her second miniature she'd ever painted. So, and then there was at least one Golden Demon winner in the class. So,
wow,
it really is the whole range.
Sergio is a multiple Golden Demon winner as well.
Yes,
right?
Yes, he is. Yeah.
So you ever won a Slayer Sword?
No.
Not that is necessarily a judge of increased quality over just having several gold trophies, but
trying to think. Yeah, his.
Possibly.
He won most recently at Adepticon, and that's where Mike Thomas also won gold. They were both at Adepticon, and I don't rate the Slayer Sword winner from Adepticon. I find it quite boring.
So that's the just really well done skink, was that?
No, that was last year's Adepticon, which I didn't rate. This year's one is a Dark Angel Lieutenant, maybe.
Yeah.
A random Dark Angel, and it's fine. It's not to my taste. That's the main thing. It's very sort of shiny style. No interesting anything to it. It's just a well technically rendered model, and I'm like, yeah, fine, you painted that. Which I suppose, you know, there's different ways you can win prizes.
No, I don't think that's true. I've seen a lot of videos that say that there's only one way that wins.
Oh, okay. So, well, yeah, that's
that must be true.
I'll just, yeah, fair. I mean, yeah, there is talk of that. There's definitely this talk of like, what are they, kind of heavy metal plus people term it and things, and it's evidently bollocks, because there's always loads of winners that don't follow that style and do very well. I can't remember her name now. Katarina, she did a couple of silvers, I'm sure, and her painting style is so different. I mean, okay, arguably they're silvers rather than whatever metric internet people want to, you know, ascribe to things. But
So it's a complete loss, obviously, if you get silver trophy.
They don't call it Silver Demon.
I'm just looking at the Sergio's album of the like output from the weekend.
Oh, it's really impressive.
There's they're all super good. Like, unless you can see each individual painter's touch in it as well. But yeah, they're super cool.
Yeah, it was interesting seeing sort of the range, how people were interpreting the sort of the class and things, and how they were doing things differently. And there is a benefit from, yeah, being sat with people. And, you know, and the obvious thing I find is I would recommend anyone who's interested in painting to any level, doing a painting course is really good, because you just get the feedback that you don't get normally. It's certainly something I've struggled with in the past, is that, you know, you can paint for ages and you know what you know you're doing something wrong, but you don't know what it is. So, yeah, although after this, I am sort of having Golden Demon related thoughts, which I hate having, because it's
yes, true.
Yeah, do it.
No. Yes. I think my only thought is, and this is after talking to people who had one, it's like an excuse to push myself might be nice, because I am quite fuck it, that will do with everything I paint, even when I am pushing myself, that I get to a point I'm just like, yeah. But I hate the idea of competition so much.
Wow. This would be a good point to highlight that you won a competition, really, which I'm not going to let you get away without talking about.
Nope.
Even though this is our second attempt at recording this podcast.
Oh no, the illusion is shattered. the mask slips. All is undone.
We were doing well.
Yeah, I was keeping quiet about that, so felt enough time had passed. Yeah, so I did a painting competition for a local club, and it was quite nice because it had tiered painting, had tiered ranks, tiered entries, however you want to describe it. So there was like a beginner, an advanced, and then an elite, which kind of makes me cringe because just advanced plus or something would have been fine, but elite has
more advanced than you.
that's not helpful. I was in the elite category and I won that, and I won a lot of Milliput, which wasn't part of the original prize structure. The original prize structure, there was only prizes for advanced and beginner, which I quite liked because it was like, oh, if you're in the top category, you don't have to worry about winning anything and you're not taking anything away from people by...
You're competing for glory.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I think you're also competing for a yellow hoodie, which I haven't received yet, so... It's a special, unique to the club yellow hoodie.
Okay, you're the only issued
for. Only issued for that. It's not just anyone, no. So.
Is this like the yellow jersey in the Tour de France? Do you have to give it up next year if you don't?
I haven't asked. I mean, like I said, I haven't got it yet, so there's a chance that I'll never get to wear it. But it was nice. The other thing that was nice with it is you didn't get to choose a model. You had to rummage in a plastic bag and draw a model out, and that was the model you had to paint. And I got a Space Marine Hero that was like the most boring of the Space Marine Heroes. It was like just a Space Marine with a bolter.
A hotly contested category.
Yes, yeah.
I would say.
Reloading his gun.
He was walking, which I suppose is a step up from just standing there like a second edition.
It's not T-posing.
Dabbing. That's for the youth. That was me contributing to something there for the Zoomers.
Is that a vape thing? I know what dabbing is.
Thank you for reassuring. You had to establish that you do know what dabbing is. Just in case.
I'm hip. I'm cool.
So, I did that with a very sculpted base. And it was the first time I'd done a sculpted base and a painted backdrop. So that was interesting. It was a good practice. So, yes, I enjoyed that.
Awesome.
So I think that's been my hobby things. Rich, have you been into anything hobby-related for the last segment of time? Units of time?
What? Oh, God. It's been a while. It's been a hot minute since I was on the podcast, I think. But, I'm not going to exhaustively list everything I painted, but I am going to...
You played some games recently as well, didn't you? Didn't you play a big Team Yankee game?
It was Flames of War, big Flames of War game with Matthew and Pete. So I've done some of that. Played games of Middle Earth and AOS and other things here and there, a bit of 40K. Next week, as we record, so probably it's already happened by the time this comes out, I am going to 1,000 points narrative Age of Sigmar event in Walsall, run by I've forgotten the Nacho Mamas Gaming Club, I think they're called, which I think is basically four great guys. They ran it last year and it was really good fun, so I'm going again this year, and I have been quite taken with the new Iron Jaws, so I am painting 1,000 points of Auric Warclans. It might be pure Iron Jaws, depending on if I get everything I want to get finished. So I've painted the new Big Pig, and I've done 10 Ard Boys, and I'm doing another 10 Ard Boys. And then I painted two characters, and then I varnished them and completely fucked them up. So they are in the bio strip and are going to be getting painted this week again.
So not enough olive oil.
No, all the olive oil in the world, despite its incredible brain-enhancing properties, could fix the wobbly-bubbly texture. So on one, it did. I nearly saved them. Because it happened on the Ard Boys as well, and they were fine eventually with a bit of olive oil and some scrubbing.
Mm.
With the characters on one of them, I sort of like got it to a point where I cleared the varnish back and then put a different mat over the top and got the finish how I wanted it. But by that point, it had so many layers of different varnishes on it that, like a chainmail sleeve that's quite a big part of the model basically looked like smooth cloth. To like, I'm sure most people wouldn't have noticed it, but it stood out to me enough for me to not like it. And on another one, on the other character, the big flat armor panels, the varnish had like formed a texture, which just meant that whenever you varnished it back again, that texture kind of like reappeared. So,
oh wow, I thought you just fogged it, but it sounds like you really fogged up.
Yeah, I think that one fogged, and then I think probably what happened is one of my attempts to fix it, I like dried it too quickly with a hairdryer and it like crackled as well or something. Anyway, yeah, it was a disaster.
Yeah, sounds it. Unfun.
But it's okay. I'm still really enjoying painting with like contrast plus a load of highlights, so to do a couple of characters is not, it'll be okay. As long as I don't have the world's most insane work week, it'll be fine. So we'll see.
Good stuff. And Nick, have you played any games recently or painted anything exciting?
Yeah, I'll kind of start with hobby and lead in from there. So I was in a slump until relatively recently, and then I painted up the store anniversary model for Carriage and Overlords.
It's a very cool model.
Yeah, it's a really fun model. Holding a tiny boat, and you can stand them in front of the same big boat, and it feels very pleasing. So painted up that, and then I have, as I might have mentioned briefly already, I've been having Warmaster thoughts. So I have a chum with a plastic printer, shout out to Pat, who has very kindly been printing off some little test strips of skeletons for me to do. And it's a plastic printer, so obviously like the resolution's not fantastic, you're not going to get that same smooth finish as you would with a resin thing, but I mostly wanted to have it done just as kind of like a quick and dirty test to see, like, do I enjoy doing this? Can I get it done quickly to like a tabletop standard? To which the answer is yes, because it's a skeleton. So you can just dunk it in contrast and call it a day.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, I've been enjoying dipping my toe into that. And then I had like a kind of Blue Peter hobby recently, in that for Warmaster Revolution, which is kind of like the fan-made rules update, I guess. There's a team, mostly Czech, who are still working on it. For that rule set, and even for Warmaster Classic, there are paper counters available, so you can get some real print-and-play goodness going by, you know, printing off stands of approximately the same size for whatever armies you're interested in. And so because me and my local friend group, who all hobby, were kind of thinking about getting into Warmaster, but didn't necessarily want to make a financial investment in something that we hated, we've been doing some print and play. So I spent like
this
a good amount of time.
Very sensible. So
I should have been doing, well, you say sensible. I spent a lot of time where I should have been doing things like work or research or, you know, just abusing the free printing I have access to, and then very studiously like glue sticking bits of cut up paper onto cardboard. But I have, yeah, so leading on from that, I have now printed and backed on kind of card two 2,000 point armies, I think. And I got weirdly obsessed with the idea of having a game in a tin. So I fit both of those armies into a tobacco tin alongside with some QR codes for like the rules and like some sample lists and stuff like that. And I even like drew some terrain bases and printed them off. And the idea being that theoretically you have everything you need to play a game of Warmaster inside this tin, apart from measuring tools and dice.
That's super cool.
The first version. Yeah, so I have been playing a couple of games of Paper Warmaster. It's pretty fun. I'm enjoying it so far. I think it's scratching the kind of rank and flank itch without having the kind of very granular detail that you get with something like Warhammer Fantasy. Obviously, we'll see what happens with the old world when it comes out, the new old world, but
Ye oldie world.
Ye oldie worldie. But yeah, Warmaster's pretty good. Otherwise, I had a game of Crossfire a couple of weeks ago. I think last month, I want to say September, which is a really interesting game. I like it mechanically. It is set in the Second World War. It's a historical game. It uses... you can play at any scale. We tend to do 15mm with kind of multi-bases. So like a kind of 40 by 40 mil square MDF base is like a squad. And it's very interesting to me as a war game because it does not have set turn lengths and it does not have any measurement. Everything is assumed to kind of be in range. So the idea is that basically you can move your troops freely as much as you like until you fuck something up or until you're forced to make a dice roll. And then at that point, there is a chance that initiative will pass to your opponent. So it's a very interesting game of kind of pushing your luck and trying to see what you can get away with as much as possible and trying to stack the odds in your favour and then inevitably whiffing the dice roll and seeing it all come undone.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it is a fun system. It's really, really interesting. It also has a delightful website from 2001 because it was written in 1995 and I don't think it's been updated officially since.
Amazing.
That's
incredible. Yeah, I have had a look at those rules, and I'm debating whether I should order a copy. We're only talking about making investments in things that you don't know if you like or not yet. So,
I mean, I can probably send you a scan if you're interested.
I feel like I should support 1995 game developers,
Marty Cudliffe.
if they're still alive.
Presumably in his retirement at this point, but you know. Don't know how far his pension's going.
No, come on. He could have written those rules in his 20s.
That's what every 20-year-old is doing.
Side-eye.
iterating the historical wargaming rules.
There's a lot of 20-year-olds called Artie as well. Definitely a name that you spring fully formed in your 40s or 50s, I think.
Incredible.
In that case, talking about historicals, I think we should move on to our main course discussion of the... I don't know why I'm going for food metaphors this evening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've not had dinner yet, so please could you actually scale them back?
Scale them back, okay. That's fair enough. Moving on to the main discussion then. Talking about historicals, the thing that you'd brought today, Nick, was sort of talking about historicals and accessibility, and seeing as we have shown behind the curtain that this is our second go at having this discussion, I've thought that perhaps we can break down sort of what you've been asking into a kind of a few sort of different layers. Now the food thing's really affecting me because I was going to say layers on the cake.
Oh. Peel back the skin of the onion.
That's peel right, back the yeah. skin of the onion.
To reveal
yes.
the sweet, sweet core.
Maybe we could go through. So if you want to introduce, perhaps best, and then we can kind of go through each section, Nick.
Yeah, I guess my background with historical wargaming is that I'm not really a military historian, to be honest. It doesn't necessarily grab me in the way that it does a lot of people. My extremely anecdotal experiences that people get into historical wargaming in particular because they have like a particular period, or they're like, oh, this tank design is really cool, or I really like what I'm interested in the technology or the methods or the means, or like there's a particular period of history I'm interested in. And despite making the past my profession, doesn't do anything for me. So it's, for me, much more about mechanics, hence my interest in Crossfire, which I've already mentioned. But I do think that for those reasons, there is very, you know, people, we touched on it just now, right? We were talking about Artie Conliffe. People have an idea in their heads of who plays historical war games and what those war games involve, and maybe the conversations about the politics behind those war games. And I think that justifiably, potentially, puts people off. So I guess I kind of wanted to open the floor to be like, what are those stereotypes? Do those stereotypes hold true? And if they are putting people off getting into maybe discussions that are more politically relevant and more interesting, like what can be done to change those preconceptions, I guess. Yeah. Let's just solve all of the problems with wargaming on this podcast.
That sounds good. Sounds reasonable. Yeah. That's what podcasts are there for.
We've got 5 minutes. Go.
I want to keep this sort of political side, I think, till last. So
yeah, definitely.
Let's talk about what do you think is the barrier to entry then for historicals from a kind of a purely game point of view? Because I've got some ideas, but I want to see what you guys think.
Okay. I mean, I have some thoughts. I think people's perception a lot, historicals is a broad church, right? As a subgenre, and I think you can be quite invested in one area or multiple areas of historical wargaming, and some of these perceived barriers can still be relevant to you for other eras or other scales or other games.
Mm-hmm.
So like an example I would give is that model accessibility and let's say level of polish. So I play a few historical games that have quite well supported plastic miniature lines in sort of 15 to 28 mil scale. Pretty common. And I know some people who play, I don't even know what the scale is. Probably like ancient stuff at 2 mil scale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where it's like a square of heads on poles kind of thing to represent your battalion of troops, or they're probably not called battalions, don't come for me, your legion of troops of Romans. I've never felt so put off by a wargaming system, because to me that looks like you are putting a load of upside down CPUs on the table with all their pins sticking up and then just pushing them around. No judgment on anyone who enjoys it. It just doesn't appeal to me. So I think probably to broaden that out, either relevance or ubiquitousness of the models you're buying or the rules you're buying into, or the complexity of those rule systems from a perceived point of view. So you're going if I get really into Crossfire and base my models for that, will I still be able to use them for other systems, or will I end up creating the same D-Day American army 16 different times, different systems in different scales? I think that can put people off.
Yeah, I think complexity is probably one of the big assumptions that people make, is that you'll be looking at tables to work out what Bodkin arrowheads do to chainmail versus broadhead arrowheads to kind of plate mail or something, and then consulting with the second appendix to work out. And there are definitely games out there which head that way. You're talking about Crossfire, it's newer game design is not, there is a large chunk of historical gaming that is based on old rules, and old rules did tend to be a certain way. They were very granular. So I suppose, complexity is certainly one that, if I had to kind of guess at what assumptions people might have about historicals, that would be one I think people would find off-putting, is the idea that you have to be an expert, either sort of expert of the period, because if you paint the wrong colour red on your red coats, you're going to get thrown out the gaming club, or the complexity of the rules themselves, because there's an expectation that they are really sort of simulation heavy games, which I don't think is true. So,
and you wouldn't want someone who is alive in the era of the red coat to see those models and be upset, would you? So,
what, because the colour's wrong?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, true.
Might as well spit on their grave.
Yeah, disrespectful.
I gave up trying to paint my Crimean wore redcoats to any degree of accuracy of their heraldry, because it's Victorian heraldry is awful and incredibly complicated.
Just paint them red. It's fine.
I mean, yeah, they are only in 15
mil.
They're
like little 15 mil guys.
Yeah. No, 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 no. You've got this tufts on their hats and they're all different colours to mean things. Then there's the facings on their coats. It's all there, but it doesn't make any sense. There's no like rhyme or reason to it. It's just like, you know, because it's the high water mark. Well, I say high water mark. The high water mark of the British Army being shit. Where it's just gained incredible amounts of baggage and pointless like pageantry. And yeah, it's awful. And yeah, very hard to kind of. So yeah, the idea that, I mean, I have that reservation because I'm like, well, if I ever use these anywhere, is someone going to be like, well, they're not the 23rd East Lancashire Wibble Bottom Brigade or whatever. It's like, you're totally wrong. They weren't in the Crimea. They were doing something else horrible somewhere else. It's like,
they were actually stationed on the eastern flank, and this matchup represents the western flank, so
yeah,
you can't use them. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
I think this is kind of getting another, I think, perceived thing about historicals, really, which is that it's full of grognards.
Or rivet counting.
Les grognards, if you want to be French about it. I don't know if that's a French word, actually.
It is.
It is, right, okay.
It's the old Napoleon's old guard.
Ah, that explains a lot about why it's used. Oh, I love to learn.
I know, it's great.
So, yeah, but I mean, you perceive, maybe, or some people perceive historical gamers as being maybe a bit gatekeeper-y, or, like you say, rivet counting is the classic term for it, or stitch counting, if you're talking about uniforms. Like,
yeah.
And there are people like that. There's people like that in every like enthusiast-related hobby, especially when it's about reproducing stuff like cosplay or reenactment, aka real-world cosplay. Just coming for people now.
Good, keep it going.
I mean, I obviously went into my thing trying to find appropriate colour schemes and stuff, and I got to the fuck it, that'll do stage very quickly. And I was like, I have books, I have several books detailing heraldry for the Crimea and colour schemes and things, but it's like, yeah, I was out of my depth so quickly on the level of some knowledge that was expected and things. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, I have some, but I wouldn't judge anyone else for not doing it, but I had some element of I wanted to be accurate going into it. So
sure.
I can certainly see the appeal. And I think Pete of this podcast has quite often talked about, you know, there is the appeal of setting out to recreate something. And I feel that quite a lot as well, whether it's historicals or whether it's, you know, 40k or 30k or something. And that's probably why, one of the reasons I like 30k is that there is this element where they give you colour plates and you can then do your copy of the space at 28 Lancastrians or whatever it is, and, you know, reproduce that. I did also, what you were saying before, Rich, did touch on something that I find as an issue with historicals, is that there is no consistent scale available that you might want to play games. So a lot of games are miniatures agnostic. You know, a lot of them do sell their own miniatures, but a lot of them, you know, it doesn't matter, because you're playing with World War II people. If you've got Warlord World War II people, or whether you've got someone else's World War II people, it doesn't make a difference. They're always going to be the same models. But almost all my stuff is in 15 mil for historicals, and then it's like, well, everyone else I know has got 28 mil or 10 mil, so you're straight away just like, can't play any of these people.
Very baffled recently by Victrix have started doing range of really nice hard plastic World War II kits. So they've done some infantry and some vehicles, but they're all in 12 mil scale, which is just not a scale I've ever encountered before. They're really, really nice, but
they look great, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, well, I could make like two whole more Flames of War armies, but in this even smaller scale.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a bit odd.
Be good for O Group.
Yeah.
Another game that no one ever wants to play. yeah, I mean, that, I suppose that's talking about accessibility of things. I'm definitely on the other side of the accessibility thing, where it's like, I'd quite like to play some people, but no one I know plays historicals, really. Or if they do, they play... What's a way to say it that doesn't sound derisive? The kind of...
Beer and pretzels?
Yeah, the Team Yankee, the sort of bolt action.
Well, just say how it is.
Just flag them off. Yeah.
Stupid populist... baby games for idiots who want to buy a product off the shelf like a freak.
Anyway, sorry, there was someone was saying something about gatekeeping.
I think your solution, Drew, which I know, I mean, you mentioned earlier, was part that you were doing it with your Saga Ancients. I think a really good thing if you want to be the flag waver for any game is to just own two forces and show up in places with it and make people play with you. Don't even say, does anyone want to, like, should I bring this? Does anyone want to play? Just bring it and set it up on a table, because once it's there, someone will be like, ooh.
So the accessibility solution is
tank.
Is forcing people to play games with you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You are, like, you're going against the expectation, right? You are lowering the barrier of entry low as possible. You don't even have to deploy.
I think anyone who's been to a games show will know the appeal of just like seeing something on a table and be like, oh, that looks cool, what's that? And just kind of wandering over and having a look. And then at that point, like, someone's like, oh, it's this really interesting system, it does this, or it's like, oh, and it's set in this period as well. And that's just an immediate buy-in, because at that point, you know, you can see a little bit of what it's about, but, you know, you want to know more.
Yeah.
Would you like to know more?
Yeah, and I think as well on that point, I think being able to convey enthusiasm about something is really key as well to get people on board. I would use the example, Drew, of when we played your Kriegspiel game many moons ago now, but you were really effusive about, like, hey, it's this system that has this really weird history. Of being used as a tool in the Prussian military as like a training tool, effectively.
Yes, yeah.
But like, this is the thing it does, this is the way it works, this is why it's different to other stuff. And that was immediately very interesting, like having that highlighted and having like, this is what it's trying to do, this is what the setting is, this is why I think it's different or interesting or unique. I think it's just really key to get people to like take a punt on something they might not otherwise.
Yeah, Kriegspiel's really good, but also then you have to, as the Kriegspiel runner, for anyone who doesn't know what Kriegspiel is it's two teams and effectively a games master, a sort of GM type role. So the two teams are kept separate, each team has its own map, your troops are cubes, just marked up with sort of well, whatever scale, divisional or company size kind of chunks, basically. And then you move them around the map as a general, and your role as that general is to give those cubes orders. But where you put them on the map isn't necessarily where they are. Each team plays blind from the other team, and they also play blind from the game master, who the game master has their own third map, where they actually control what the real world is. So you only get reports and you only get to kind of put down the enemies where you think the enemies are and stuff. So, yeah, you have, to me, and I always find wargaming kind of sort of wanky. And there's I always look for kind of wanky and sort of performative roleplay element to my wargames. It's one of the reasons that a lot of games I don't like are the ones where you are sort of, I feel that you are very devoid from what your supposed role is. But when you play a general in Kriegspiel, you are a general. It's like you don't have to do... There's no gamesmanship because you don't know what the rules are. The rules are only handled by the GM. Your ability to interact with the game is the same as what you would have as an officer in a engagement. And then there is obviously a scale there where, you know, you are not going to lead the men directly into combat because you physically cannot do that on the table. You know, you are always going to be behind the lines because you are the senior commander. You're not just a sort of divisional commander or something. But yeah, that I find really kind of interesting. That it's simulation gameplay without being too complicated, but you go back to the same before, Rich, is that, you know, the 2 mil scale game, there's no aesthetic appeal to you because you're just looking at these little cubes on the table. And Kriegsspiel, again, is that.
Yeah, so. I mean, I didn't take part in the Kriegsspiel game that you organised. And I think having sort of watched it happen, maybe I would in the future. But to me, yeah, it is more of a, like a role play type thing than it is a tabletop war game, right, to me.
Like, yeah, I think the thing that I find really fascinating about it is that the player experience is very much its kind of free-form role play, effectively, in that you are speaking to your co-commanders when you can, you're passing messages to and from, and then you're like directing your troops in a very abstract way. So it's kind of, there's no crunch at all, whereas obviously behind the scenes there's all kinds of crunchy stuff going on.
Yes,
so I think from that perspective it's really, really interesting that, as you say, it is very systemic in some ways, it is very systems driven, but as a player you don't have that interaction with it at all.
Yes.
And there is, even though it's just tiny cubes moving around the map, because I think there is, you know, it's that thing in popular culture of everyone stood around the war room and they're using those little pushers to kind of push tanks and stuff around a map. Using an actual map is quite pleasing. It kind of gives it a sense of place in a way, as opposed to, like, you could argue that even if you have the tabletop miniatures game, right, where you do have the plastic people and you do have that spectacle, they are playing on the rolling flat green plane of, you know, tabletop,
yeah,
wherever. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there's a, yeah, there is an element to it. Something, you know, the Kriegsspiel is an interesting way of introducing people to it, but it's weird because it's introducing them to something that's so different from everything else out there. But yeah, I don't know. I think there is a lot of sort of preconceptions. I think a lot of the preconceptions about historical games can be very, very accurate. However, there's certainly games I've looked at that are horrifically, horrifically complicated. and yeah, you know, even if I've tried to play them on my own, it's like you are just constantly looking at the manual, and I cannot believe that you would ever get to the point where you aren't constantly referring to things and having to look back at stuff. And I just, to me, it's okay, they're maybe trying to be realistic, but they've lost all the realism because you're having to do all this incredibly pointless, when I say pointless, quite incredibly detailed bookkeeping that to me is robbing a lot of the experience of any kind of gravitas, because this thing X happens and then you spend 15 minutes working out the consequences of it, you're not seeing the immediate response, and then having to quickly think, oh, what's the solution? How do I handle this from a kind of command point of view? So, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Does anyone have any sort of general views until we move on to the large, conspicuous elephant in the room of historicals?
I mean, I guess I think that the thing I'd say that we should say is that, you know, we've talked about these reasons why people perceive barriers to entry in historicals, and you shouldn't necessarily, it's not true, it's not, yeah, well, it can be true, but it's not, you know, you shouldn't let that stop you from trying to engage with it if it's a setting or a system that you want to take part in. There are huge, almost every town has sort of an accessible wargaming club or two.
Yeah.
That is often where you will find people playing these historical games. Almost everyone who plays them will have enough forces that you could go along and experience a huge range of different systems without ever investing yourself beyond, like, paying to get in and, you know, maybe buying someone a drink. But
yeah.
So, yeah, like, the way that they become less kind of old guard and locked in is by new people taking part in them. So go, do.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I would definitely shout out Saga as a good game for the historical curious.
Yes,
Saga is very
game.
Much at the beer and pretzels-ish end of the scale. It is certainly not a realistic historical game. It's very open. The unit count is very small. There isn't any ranking or flanking, so to speak. So unit facing and movement is, again, very flexible. You're not having to worry too much about what's going on. But it gets you in that period, and it has the feel of a historical game. I mean, Saga has a fantasy expansion, and the rules do not significantly change. And Saga also covers quite a few periods. So, you know, it's very much on the sort of Flames of War Team Yankee end of the scale, I think, or Bolt Action potentially as kind of the accessible historical game. And if anyone's interested in, yeah, sort of ancients to sort of Viking Age of historicals, then, yeah, Saga, I would recommend.
Yeah, I guess my one big overall point would be that there is, in my experience, there is no more or less gatekeeping in historical wargaming than there is in any other form of wargaming, which is to say that it does exist.
Yeah.
There is stuff out there. There are wrong ones out there. You know, it's worth highlighting that we are three white dudes. Obviously, we do not face the brunt of discrimination or prejudice in that way. But as with any aspect of the hobby, there are also people who are working to make their spaces inclusive. And it's really worth highlighting that and shouting it out and making it clear that, you know, the vocal minority, or what is perceived as the vocal minority of people who are more interested in gatekeeping than having fun, do not speak for everyone, and that is not necessarily the case.
In that case, let's move on to the final. After we've sort of bigged up the hobby, talked to the police, is the biggest stumbling block to most people I speak to for historicals, which is... Well, in the show notes here, it's listed as historical ickiness, which is probably...
Maybe downplaying it slightly.
I mean, there's two sides, aren't there? There's two sides to it, which is you are playing a game set with real people, and also you are playing games where the political agendas of certain factions are very much... You know, a live problem in the world today.
Those Carthaginians.
Those Carthaginians, exactly.
I shouldn't make light, sorry. I mean, yeah, it can be it can certainly be something that puts people off, right? You know, if you're going to play Flames of War or Bolt Action, someone's got to play the Germans or other fascist ally. Or the Japanese, or, you know, the baddies, inverted commas.
Yeah, that's a difficult term, isn't it? Because people like to be like, oh, someone has to play the baddies. And you're like, maybe everyone in a
maybe
war.
Maybe they're all bads.
Is all bads, to certain degrees.
Yeah, I mean, I think we, again, in our, like, abortive first attempt at this podcast, we talked around this at length, and then... Literally, as we stopped recording it, a friend of show, Loop, wrote a really good article on Goonhammer about this and their personal experience, sort of based on their background, with why it's relevant to them. And I think the best thing we can do is just direct people to read that.
Yeah, 100%. It's a superb article. I think it is... Well, it's exceptionally written. It touches on these issues in a way that is both personally relevant to his experience and universally relevant, in the sense that it's kind of thinking about the systemic factors that are still affecting people's lives today. It's not trying to make an argument per se, but it is really investigating and digging into, like, what do we mean when we say, like, playing the baddies? Who do we consider the baddies and the goodies? How does that tie into, like, the way that we think about wargaming more generally. It's a stonking article. It's really, really good.
It is very good. I have different takes on it, but then it's like, you know, that article's about personal feelings in a lot of regards, and my issues, even though I play historicals, I have issues with historicals. And my issues with them are, you know, from my personal experience and things. So I think that's the thing, is there was never going to be a universal answer to it. So it's one of those ones where you do have to capture more people's feelings and opinions and be, you know, open to that. That it's like you have to be aware, more so in historicals I think than anything else, that what you are doing may be challenging to some people. And other games have all of this, but they give it a veneer that, you know, there are plenty of forces, or all the forces in 40K and all the forces in Age of Sigmar are horrible, awful people, and they are most certainly going to do horrible and awful things if they are successful in whatever battle they're playing. But they're never doing those things in reflection of real life, and it is always veneered.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you're playing a game, a historical game, you are actively representing a conflict where the agendas of the troops involved, the people that you are pushing around the table for fun, their objective, in some cases institutionally and in some cases societally or just sort of adjacently, are to do very unpleasant things. Like, if you are playing the South in an American Civil War game, or if you are playing the Nazis or the Japanese, you have an institutionalized system where you are, the political motivation or the motivation for why you are doing any action is to do atrocious, horrible things, or to preserve atrocious and horrible systems. And you can't veneer that. And I think particularly sort of American Civil War and the Second World War is that we in the world today are still living with the consequences of those actions, you know, on the political systems that created them and motivated them, I suppose. Whereas, yes, Romans invading Carthage was to do, you know, a genocide, but it doesn't have the same impact as it does on sort of real world things.
Time heals all wounds, that's what you're saying.
And it heals all wounds, yeah.
I might
kidding. Well, yeah, again, sorry, Nick, did you have something?
Well, just not to immediately shut you down, but I might gently push back on the idea that the things that the Romans were doing have no impact on our political structures and institutions today. Basically, because a bunch Romans, of Italians in the 15th century were weebs for Romans, and now we've got to live with that.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, I mean, that is true.
I mean, it's the borders of all our countries are half defined by, you know, what's gone before. It is. I suppose it's the directness, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, you look at it, you know, it's like the Roman Republic and then the Roman Empire were all quite different. And then you had like Christian Romans period. It's like, it's hard to kind of say Rome. That's the thing people like to block out Rome as this one thing. And it's like, no, it's really not. It's, I suppose it's wrong to say that it has no impact. I mean, there's the same thing.
I take the broader point, yeah.
It's sort of like, we don't have issues with the Swedes. Because I live in the northeast, we're not like bloody Swedish people coming here, killing our monks, bastards. But yeah, it is that. I mean, my partner like queries it and stuff, and you know, they say it's like, what are your Vikings doing? And it is like, yeah, my Vikings are never going out there to gently encourage people to like engage in some kind of like market research, at which point they take away all their kind of holy books and melt down their, you know, their treasures and stuff. So yeah, it's, but then it's the same thing. It's like you're playing 40K and you're playing Age of Sigmar. A lot of the factions are doing equally terrible things, but there isn't that real world impact. And I think that's the issue I have personally. Is
yeah, I think it's probably worth saying for the bad faith diggers that may be listening. I very much doubt there are any, actually. We're not that popular.
But, not popular enough to have bad faith listeners.
You're just trying to cut me off, aren't you?
Yes. I can see the glint in your eye. In Drew's list of like the Nazis. When you're the Nazis, you're trying to do atrocities. That is the perspective of the real life people. Not when you are playing the Nazis, you are endorsing atrocities. Because I think this is another thing from Loop's article. Like, the point effectively is that all this stuff happened, and memorializing is not the right word, but sort of remembering that it happened is an important part of historical knowledge, right? And yeah. emotional intelligence. And not to go read the article, because it's way better than I will explain it, but a huge reaction that they got from certain quarters was people like pointing at it and going, they say I'm bad if I play the Nazis, which was like,
it's a really astonishing takeaway from the article. Yeah.
Point of that. Like, so yes, we are not saying you are bad if you want to paint the Nazis. You are bad if you want to paint a swastika on your Nazis, and I will not take any questions on that. Don't paint hate symbols on models. Full stop.
I have disagreeing views potentially on both those things.
Well,
which
hate symbols on your models. True.
I will say I think that we talked before about historicals, and it's like, there is, I can see the attractiveness of doing a accurate representation of something, and I don't see, some of them are acceptable and some of them are not, and there is this double standard which I think behooves people to recognize that the swastika is the flag that a certain group of people doing war crimes fought under, and you know, people doing crimes against humanity fought under. It is not the only one that people fought under, and I think my issue there is that people focus on one and they don't look at the other. And but the other thing I would say is, I don't think you should be painting swastikas on your flags, because even if, you know, on your tanks or whatever, because even if you wholeheartedly believe that your intentions are just to have an accurate recreation of a particular unit or a particular time and a place, is what you're actually doing is you're smoke screening for people who are the bad actors and do want to use hate symbols in public.
This is it, right? You know, we can have a huge argument that the swastika is a symbol of peace used by various religions and societies around the world long before the Nazis adopted it. However, it is also, like, even ignoring World War II, it is a modern hate symbol used by fascist organisations, and that is why I would not paint it on a model.
Exactly. And you, like I say, my biggest issue with it is that you are smoke screening for people. That you, if you, it is normalised, you're giving people who are using it in bad faith or to be provocative, you are giving them legitimacy and concealment. And I think that is a challenge. But I think a lot of the conversation focuses too much around the swastika because it ignores what the Japanese were doing and it ignores what the Italians were doing. And you can't ignore that. It's just that the Nazis are the cartoon villain du jour, when in reality it's still fascism and stuff, and totalitarianism is often the problem. And you know, and the same with the, you know, the stars and bars for the American. Oh, but stars and bars is the proper US flag, isn't it? The Southern flag.
Yeah, the Confederate flag. Don't paint the Confederate flag on things either.
Yeah, exactly.
That is a weird one, because I don't. You're right, in a way. Like,
for us in the UK, that is not a hate symbol, but it's potentially more of a hate symbol in the US than it is.
Meowing down the microphone.
In the UK, so, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting one, because I don't know that I would instinctively react the same way to, like, lined up unit of, you know, like, grey-coated Confederate soldiers fighting for, inverted commas, states' rights. Like, and someone having modelled a Confederate flag. I don't know that I would instinctively react to that the same way as someone who has draped an air identification flag, a big Nazi flag, over the back of every single tank in their bolt action army. But
like, I think the broader point to draw out from that is that we're not playing war games in a formless void, right? None of this is happening
absolutely.
In a vacuum.
Exactly.
We're playing in a particular cultural context. And so there. That is something you have to bear in mind, and you just have to kind of think beyond a surface level. And I think it kind of goes back to what you were saying, Rich, about like people's reactions to that article. A lot of them just had the knee-jerk thing of being like, this article is discussing playing the Nazis in wargaming. I play the Nazis in wargaming, but I'm not a badun. Like, I'm not a Robin.
Yeah.
So immediately decrying the article. How dare you? Exactly. And obviously, firstly, that is not the point of the article at all. But secondly, I think it is quite telling that a lot of people had that knee-jerk reaction because they don't necessarily want to, like, think through these topics or issues in detail. They don't want to think through, like, what does it mean to accurately model, well, you know, model and represent on the tabletop to varying degrees of accuracy a historical force which went out and did war crimes. Like, a historical force that was acting on the side of oppression. And again, a point that the article makes very well, which is something that we're going to be saying a lot this podcast, is that you can make the same claims about the British Army, because the British Army went on the exact, often the exact same troops after the war went on to commit truly awful atrocities that simply do not have the same cultural resonance for a whole host of reasons.
And I think that's my issue with it, is that people fixate on certain things, and what I almost said before is that you have to be having a conscious understanding that how you are doing stuff is going to reflect very differently on, you know, one of the Saga supplements is, because Saga works with core rules and you buy supplements for different time periods, it's, the supplement is called the Crusades, and you're like, that is a very loaded term in certain parts of the world. You know, and that is something that has current implications and things. It's you have to be sensitive, I think, to what other people are doing and what other people are thinking when you come to play historical war games, more so than anywhere else, because you are always doing something that is going to reflect on other people, and other people are going to have personal and very valid experiences and takes on those aspects of things. That,
and I think, sorry, go on, Drew, I'd cut you off there.
No, I'm probably just going to say the same things over again, that you just have to be responsible and sort of thoughtful about how you do it. And yeah, probably don't use hate symbols on
it's
your
a good
tanks.
Strategy.
It is, yeah.
And I think, while I agree with the principle that, you know, huge amounts of war crimes have been committed under the British or English flags over the past 100 years. Well, and before, but, you know, if we're equating to kind of the rise of fascism in Europe, then, you know, these things have still been done in the name of Britain and many other sort of, you know, every member of the G7, for example. but I do think the cultural implication is such that I wouldn't say, personally, like, don't put a Union Jack on your tank. I mean, don't put a Union Jack on your tank, because British flags didn't really fly the Union Jack, I think.
There it is.
But
there's
not
the
saying, like, don't put the Union Jack or Union flag on your tank, because
it's a hate symbol.
It's a hate of it, because I think the modern context is just divorced in a different way. But I appreciate, again, like, everyone is going to have their own level of comfort with this. I do think, I mean, again, other people have said it better, but effectively, like, if you're comfortable playing a German army, like a Wehrmacht army, fine. You know, to me, this is, to me, someone's got to be the baddies. If you're going to play, like, an SS battalion with all your, like, little SS tokens and stuff, I'm probably going to give you quite a lot less of the benefit of the doubt.
I think, see, that's, again, part of the illusion, because there's the, you know, the argument that the Wehrmacht is a sort of the clean Wehrmacht, which I think everyone accepts.
That's not the argument that I'm making.
No, no, right? I'm not saying it is the argument you're making, but it's the argument that a lot of people do
make. It's the whole, they were just soldiers, they didn't know what they were doing. Bullshit. They did.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people actively subscribed to it. A lot of people in Germany, after World War II ended, had quite a lot of, like, oh, was quite good under the Nazis, actually, wasn't it? But that's not to say that every German person actively endorsed it. That's not to say that, you know, like, there's now a heritage of Germans are Nazis or anything like that. But, you know, the reality is, by and large, whether because of the circumstances it put them in or because they actively believed in it, a lot of the people involved in these things were actively involved in them. And doing it because they thought it was right or good or it aligned with their beliefs.
Yeah.
So yes, from that point of view, I don't think it's like, well, the Wehrmacht are fine and then the SS are bad. But I do think that, again, cultural impact, there is an element of like, well, why would you choose the one that is even worse, potentially? Like,
why would you choose the one with the reputation or the cultural signifiers of being...
And that
like,
answer...
No one...
Yeah, the answer might be, well, I really like Tiger Tanks and they have a cooler Tiger Tank formation in Flames of War.
Yeah.
Fine. I just think, you know, side eye is a thing. And if you turn up with swastikas painted all over them or wearing like a swastika ridden armband, then yeah, obviously you're wrong.
I mean, that's quite good though, because at least those people are just identifying as like it's the opposite of smoke screening.
Yeah,
you have a literal red flag and you're waving it.
Yeah, I mean, people turn up to fucking 40k events wearing stuff covered in swastikas, so that is not necessarily a historical wargaming thing.
No,
I guess a point that I think I'd like to draw out about this is that, you know, you can ask. You can say, like, hey, why are you playing this army? Or, like, hey why
you
do
you
have...
You were fucked up, little
I mean,
freak.
Yeah, kind of. You can just ask, like, hey, how come you're playing with the SS tokens? You know, like, what is it that you think you're doing here? And then have that conversation at the tabletop or before you get to the tabletop and then proceed from there, you know? I think it is... it's a mistake of thinking... I mean, this does not apply to historical wargaming alone by any means, but, like... There is not a line you can draw where you say, right, past this line, that's where it's bad, but on this side of the line, that's where it's fine.
Oh, yeah, that, absolutely, yeah.
These things are going to be different for every person. These things are going to necessarily be different in different cultural contexts. And, like, you just need to ask. You just need to start that conversation and think about it. And I think that also leads to less, like, knee-jerk, oh, you're saying that playing the Nazis is bad. Because then you can kind of draw out where people actually stand on it and start those conversations about critical thinking. Like, I don't... So, having, like, talked about playing Crossfire and things like that, I don't collect historicals. I find it really uncomfortable spending my time, my hobby time, something that I'm doing for pleasure, like, lovingly painting weapons that were really used to really kill people.
Yeah,
it's not something that I want to do.
Totally fair.
And that doesn't mean that I think that people who do are wrong-uns, apart from Pete, he's a wrong-un. Everyone, but like, you know, that's just a personal thing for me. Like, it feels, you know, because of my personal history, because of how I feel about conflict, because of all kinds of reasons that I couldn't even like rationally explain or comprehend. Whereas I know people who are queer, who are Jewish, who are from marginalised identities that have painted, like, you know, SS battalions, but have had a rationale for doing so, have been able to explain why they do so, have kind of talked that through in ways that are clear and clearly work for them and make sense to them. And, like, it's a matter that will never really be settled, you know? I think it's also a mistake to think that this is a one and done. Like, it has to be an ongoing conversation. It has to be something that is revisited.
I think that was that's probably my objection with saying that, you know, trying to draw a line saying the SS is on one side of it. And I know you weren't sort of fully saying that,
but
Rich.
You're right. People do try and do that all the time.
Human beings want to have rules which they can easily follow and apply to stuff, and people want to pigeonhole things. And I think that becomes a challenge. And that's why people get the knee-jerk reaction as well, because they're like, you just said this thing, you threatened this thing that is... for me, enjoyment, therefore you are against it. And it's like, you know, everything I've said here, it's like, I have played the Nazis in games, and I quite like to play the Nazis in games, because one of the factors is that I know if I'm playing the Nazis, someone else isn't, and I know that my, you know, reasons for doing so are not solely fixated on because I'm tugging it off to Hitler every night.
But yes, no, that's fair. I like to think that anyone who's like thought critically about this should view kind of like similarly disdainfully someone who, when you say, you know, someone who gets angry when you ask them, well, why are you playing the SS? Like, what's your reasoning? Not criticism, but what's your reasoning? If someone's going to react negatively to that, I'd like to think you'd sort of view the same way someone who reacted negatively to you saying, like, oh, you know, like, the British Army did a lot of war crimes. Like, if someone has a nice British Army and you bring that up and they go, no, Britain was the good guys, then, you know, that's, like, equally deplorable view, really. Like,
yes.
So, yeah, like, critical thinking is key, as with anything. I think we're probably going to end up going in circles here if we carry on for much longer.
I think
longer.
We are. I mean, this is I think this is sort of the thing that you almost said before, Nick, when you're talking about people having conversations at the table, is, and the thing that you didn't actually say there, which I thought you might do, is the saying that you never have to play a game with someone.
Hit the bricks.
Yeah.
You can just leave.
You can just leave. And I think everyone should recognise that. And at the end of the day, we are all doing a hobby. The clue is in the name. It is, you know, it's a hobby. It should be fun. It should be enjoyable. And everyone should have a duty of care to make sure that other people are comfortable and are having a good time in the games that you're playing and how you're conducting yourself and things. So,
and I think just to loop it back to where we started this topic broadly, which was, you know, historical war games and getting into them and barriers to entry, would say that, like, hopefully this is some evidence that lots of the people who do play these kind of games, like, they are thinking critically about these things and willing to have these conversations. And I think, like, the vast majority of people at club, if you ask them to teach you bolt action, aren't going to say, okay, this is the Nazis and they're really cool. Like, are probably going to have, because they're probably history enthusiasts, right, as well. Like, people don't, with a few probable exceptions, like, people don't play these games in the way they might play 40k to just win all the tournaments and not understand the source material, or not care about the source material, sorry, not understand the source material. Maybe it implies that the source material of 40k is sacred in a way that it really isn't.
Well, some people certainly play it that way, let me tell you that.
Some people like to win tournaments, some people like to win arguments.
I do both.
Do you ever win an argument?
I do. So yeah, go out there, play some Saga. Basically, a good conclusion, go and play Saga, it's nice.
Yeah, Saga's like least problematic.
Yeah, unless you're a Carthaginian, in which case.
And they had it coming.
They had it coming. I mean, they were awful anyway, Carthaginians, so.
Dog-eat-dog world back in ancient times.
Yeah. So. Bit of human sacrifice is all you need to run your political system.
At the end of the day, like, it's called wargaming for a reason, and people generally, like, go to war because they have strongly held beliefs that conflict with other people's strongly held beliefs. And that's generally not a recipe for, actually, everyone was very reasonable and had really good opinions about lots of things.
Yeah, and if you really don't like what we've been talking about, there are a community out there who look at trying to do non-violent war games with the war in inverted commas. So, there is something for everyone. To calm down and relax about this sort of fraught topic, do you want to talk about hobby stress, Rich?
Yeah, so basically, I get stressed when anyone asks me why I've painted all of these little Panzer IVs. It's not that. We've been going quite a while already. I don't think this is something we need to focus on for very long. And, you know, it's becoming a running joke that every time I come on the podcast, I just have a little meltdown about hobby being difficult or models, there being too many models. But I find, like, sometimes stuff in life stresses you out, right? And hobby is, as a big part of my life, is no exception. It's something that fills a huge amount of my waking time and thinking time. So naturally, bits of it wind me up. And at the moment, the thing that's winding me up is I own too much stuff and I want to get rid of some of it. And I don't really want to dwell on that because it's going to be boring to listen to me talking about putting models on eBay for like the sixth time.
I thought this was you smoothly transitioning it into a sales pitch.
So if anyone wants six Woz's Warriors from the Middle-Earth strategy battle game that I've been really struggling to shift, then yeah, hit me up. But yeah, I guess more an open question to you two. Like, do you find yourself getting stressed out at all by aspects of the hobby? And do you have any good tips for... Drew, I waited for you to be on a pod with you to ask this question. do you have any tips for dealing with it or getting over it? Go.
I feel like I'm just going to say really predictable things. So, yeah, I have loads of hobby stress. But a lot of my life is stress. The hobby is arguably less stress. But I have a very bad habit of turning everything I do into a job. Just this time it's a job that doesn't pay me. So yeah, no, I don't know what the solution is. That's my thing, is that yes, I do. So first part, do you have it? Yes. Do you have an answer? Oh god, no answer at all. I think the important thing is to realize that actually I did have one. I used to try and never play with unpainted models. I was very religious about that, and I stopped giving a fuck about it because I realized it was just making me miserable, particularly before events and stuff. And this was, you know, casual friendly events and things that, yeah, or just playing games. It's like I was flogging myself to try and finish things, to stick to this rule that I had not entirely created, because I think there is a stigma about playing with unpainted models. And it's like, I paint really slowly, and if I want to play a load of different games, I'm not going to finish everything. So just stop being a dickhead about it and making up this arbitrary rule that you then like punish yourself for not sticking to. And I have felt a lot better for just being like, yeah, it's fine. You know, I know for a fact that I spend probably longer painting a single Marine than people will spend painting a squad, because they paint differently to me. And I'm like, I have just created this kind of rule that I'm holding myself against and thinking that everyone else is doing the same, when it's like, no, they aren't. And then, you know, there's tons of people who never paint their models and, you know, barely assemble them and
legs on a base. It's a classic.
Yeah. So that's my biggest thing, is just realizing that, like, stop being a tit to yourself is really helpful.
Self-care is always good, right? Like, I've also wound my neck in on the idea that I must play painted at all times.
And I think it's like a point of pride people say, and then it's like, well, you have to... Well, for me, I'm like, well, that's nice. It works for them. It doesn't mean it has to work for you. It doesn't have to work for me. It's like... Yeah, I don't know. Inheriting other people's kind of standards is a mistake, because they have different lifestyles and you can't.
Absolutely, yeah. That's a good way of putting it. That's a really good way of putting it, actually. Yeah. Judge yourself by the standards with which you would judge other people. Like, be kind to yourself. Like, everyone's their own worst critic, right? Or, like, has weird rules for themselves that they would never impose on others. Like, how about you, Nick? Is there something you grapple with at all?
No, I'm really well adjusted.
Nice. Oh, I'm glad to hear it. One of three ain't bad.
No, I think I don't know that I have hobby stress per se. I think I mean, as you say, like, I'm perfectly happy to play with unpainted models. It's like, would I love to have fully painted armies on the tabletop always? Yes. Would I like to live not under a Tory government? Yes. I'm doing what I can, you know, that's within my power for both of those things, but fundamentally some aspects of that are gonna always be outside of my control. And also, like, I mentioned at the start of the pod, I think I was in a hobby slump for a little while, and just accepting that was quite helpful. Just accepting, like, I'm just not feeling it right now. There's a lot going on for various reasons. I'm not getting the hobby done that I would like to get done, and that's okay. And then doing the classic, like, okay, so instead of, like, trying to bash my head against the thing that I feel that I should do but don't want to do, I'll just do something else. Just do, like, a palate cleanser or whatever is really helpful. And just also accepting that it's, like, hobby will ebb and flow. I don't know any person that has painted every single one of their models before they goes out and buy something new. You know,
you
I don't know anyone. Yeah, I'm sure they exist. I'm sure they're out there. Don't get me wrong. But
you know, Laura, who's
To be fair, even Laura, who is
even Laura has not always
normally
done that.
Is normally preemptively oh, okay. buying things.
Yeah,
I mean, her shame pile is like vanishingly small, but even she is normally like, I have 5 models left to paint. Time to order a few more things. Like,
okay,
whereas the concept of having 5 models left to paint is like, but truly, honestly. Just not to turn this into a podcast where we talk about Laura without her being here, but that is so aspirational to me. I really,
really,
really, really want to be the person that just has, like, this is the thing I'm painting, and when it's done, I will go and buy another thing, and I will paint
without
it.
Wanting to get too deep and turn this into an impromptu therapy session, like, why do you think that is?
It's just, like, focus, right? And or rather, I suppose maybe the inverse. I find the big jumble of unpainted stuff like very defocusing because to me that's like a bunch of open tabs in a folder of like things you've got to do, and that makes my brain cry. But as a person probably with ADHD, albeit undiagnosed, like I sort of need to be able to jump around a few things. That's been my be kind to myself this year, has just been like, just do what you want with painting.
Yeah,
like, so
I found that really helpful.
I was really dragging myself through painting some Soulblight, and I'm really, really happy with how they're coming out, but I set a really high standard, and so I enjoy painting things to that standard, but I don't want to power through an army like that all at once. So I just ended up slapping contrast on a load of Oryks, and there was just a moment where that in my head flipped and was like, well, maybe I should actually like focus on using these and doing the Soulblight, like not using these as a distraction from the Soulblight that I need to go back to, but rather a like do the easy thing and pepper in the enjoyable but complex thing now and then, rather than the other way around. So yeah, but the real thing for me is I'm always stressing to paint things for events, and what I'm really trying to do, although it hasn't worked this time, because, you know, I went, oh, I've got 1,000 points of painted Oryks, and then went, ah, but I'd like some of the new ones. But I'm trying to not too often, like, sign myself up to an event with the expectation I am painting something for it. So I'd rather be like, I'm signing up to this thing in 4 months, I'm going to take this army that is ready, and in the meantime, I'm painting this other thing. And that has probably been the biggest positive for me. Doesn't work for 40k because I keep making my space marines cost fewer points, and now I need to paint a load of stuff for an event again. But
classic GW, that's how they do it. They just
reduce
the points every time, so you have to buy more.
Bullied by GW.
I mean, I didn't mention in my hobby things is that I played the Goonhammer Open Heresy event, which was very good.
Oh yeah.
Not to, because it was the same person who wrote the article, ran that, so just rave about Goonhammer and Edwin of Goonhammer. Yeah, he ran the Heresy event as well. And that was very good. But talking about hobby stress, I, like a fucking genius, was like, I'm going to design and 3D print my own army for
it. Yeah, you did that.
God, that was
absolute mad lad.
We completely forgot to talk about that. It was so good as well. They were really, really good.
It's worth looking at. Have you got a collection of that somewhere, or is it just on your Insta?
It's barely on my Instagram. Best place to see it is on the Goonhammer article coverage of it, because they took photos and I didn't, because I was busy trying to work out how fucking AdMech play. Because that was the other added level of stress, is that because I was spending too long to design and then print and then paint this army, never got any test games in. So it was like the first time I used AdMech, not AdMech, Mechanicum in 30k, and I was just like, shit, these robots do something. It helped that I only had like 3 units and they were all the same, or sorry, 3 unit types and then lots of duplication between them. But yeah, it was like, I didn't take any photos because I was incredibly stressed. So don't be me. That's my actual advice, is like, don't 3 months before an event think, I might have been 2 months even before an event think, yeah, just model and print your entire army and then paint it.
I think you said the last thing was coming off your printer like a week before the event, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So. I'll line them up when I do take some photos in paint standard. You can judge which ones I did first and then like watch as the paint standard goes down.
Yeah. And people should check those out because they're really cool. And I think we talked about this last time. You should put those files up somewhere for people to buy as well, because they're super cool and they're not copyright infringing.
No,
which is very cool.
I will do. I need to. There's a few little issues with the files that I like sanded things down and made things fit when I was building them, which I want to fix.
Yeah,
and get my tolerances sorted. But yeah, I will do at some point.
I meant to ask, did you get any like army votes or anything for that at the event? Or?
Not that I know of, but it was best painted, and I would have been very upset if someone had said that mine was the best painted, because it was definitely
best painted. Always means coolest army, really, unless it's being judged by judges. So,
people so best
love conversions, the freaks,
best weirdly designed, and then 3D printed. Yes. But no, I didn't get anything for that. But I very rarely ever do. I don't win stuff.
You should. You're good at stuff.
I'm talking about stress and winning stuff. We'll see in
a
month's time or 2 months' time if I decided to do a Golden Demon, and then we'll talk about stress. And
I've been thinking about starting my entry for next year, despite the fact I don't even know if there is a UK Golden Demon next year yet. They haven't announced it. But
there will be, because it's
surely there will be. They've announced Adepticon, and I'm not going to Adepticon. So.
What's more likely is that it'll be ticketed again, and they won't get a ticket. But that almost would be a perfect situation for me, because you wouldn't have to go and go to Manchester and fuck about.
Yeah,
and
Manchester's nice.
Yeah, no, Manchester's pretty good. It was a bit. I think I can't remember if I ever talked about Warhammer Fest on this pod or not. It was a bit like, I don't want to say annoying, because that's too strong a word. Like, I didn't have an incredibly strong emotional response to it like that, but the absolute latest you could submit your model for Golden Demon was Sunday morning, and then if you got through to the, I think you didn't know if you'd made it through to the like through the first cut until the end of Sunday, and if you had, you then had to hang around for like all of Monday as well. So if you were doing the whole weekend and coming and like submitting it on Friday night like I did, that was like a long weekend of being in that event, and if you're not doing any of the gaming stuff, running out of things to look at quite quickly.
So, I suppose there's stuff in Manchester you can go and do, so
yeah, I mean that's what we ended up just talking about doing in the end, but anyway, yeah, that's not to turn this into reviewing an event from the end of April this year in October. But yeah, either way, I'm feeling like I want to try and paint something to a competition standard again. So
that's maybe, what I'm thinking.
Yeah, Drew, if we don't get a Golden Demon next year, you and I will just meet up in a pub somewhere and look at each other's models, and then that'll be fine.
Excellent. Sounds good.
To kind of circle back to hobby stress, I have the delightful freedom of not being a very good painter, so everything I do, even if it doesn't look very good, I am trying a new technique, I'm doing something different, or I'm like, well, I learned that never do this is often the case. But
learning is good.
Learning is good. And then I guess the second thing is that like hobby stress is just kind of like life stress, really. Like the things that people tend to feel stressed out, certainly the things that I have felt stressed out about with hobby have just been the things that I felt stressed out about with regards to life. And like, if you can take a step back and be like, what am I getting out of hobby? What would I like to get out of hobby? Where is money. There maybe a gap between those two things currently? I want people to pay me for my incredible painting skills.
And start a Patreon.
Rare OOP pro painted.
Yeah. All the keywords. Yeah, I think that's a really good insight, though, Nick. Just like, you know, if you're wound up about an orc, is it actually the orc or is it like something else in life?
Is it your mother?
is the Orc your father? And also, just to say it louder for the people in the back, you have a painted army that you can put on the table and be proud of. So you are a good painter, in fact.
Yeah.
You cannot describe yourself as not a good painter. I'm sorry, but it's illegal. What is you holding your hand up for, True?
I always describe myself as, because I'm guilty of that.
Yeah,
always, exactly. Always saying not a good painter.
You are a good painter, True. The trouble is, like, what you want to do, just like join a load of Instagram groups for like people who are just learning to paint, and then you feel really good about yourself. Drew, you need to stop following all these people like Katarina on Instagram and comparing yourself to them.
No, the problem is I always compare myself to myself, and then I'm just like, the thing you really shouldn't do is compare yourself to yourself, because then you're just like, you've got your inbuilt worst enemy then.
Yeah.
Take it with you everywhere.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right? Like, and I'm not being serious, by the way, when I say only follow new painters, so you can verify yourself, just to be clear. Everyone's on their own hobby journey, on painting journey, and everyone who paints, puts paint on a model, is a superstar. And I love you all.
It's very good. Hell right. Yeah. I think on that note, I'm going to sail this dessert into harbour to torture two references.
I was going to say, before we do that, do we want to do some questions? Or are we thinking that it's running a bit long?
I leave it to you, because I've eaten my dinner.
Fine. I think the questions are really good. So we got three really good questions. I can read a question out if you want.
Okay.
We can do one each.
All right.
I'm going to read the first one. How do you want to see Epic 30K expand? Assume that you are not allowed to say, I want it to cover 40K as well. That is from Carnelian, our resident Legions Imperialis obsessive. Well, Epic obsessive, let's say. Any thoughts?
I would not wish to see 30k expand, because then it would no longer be at the scale, which is part of the appeal.
Boo! Terrible.
Epic is a big nostalgia game to me. Epic was the second game I ever played after they cancelled my beloved Man of War in 93 or whatever it was. I'm really not bothered about 30k Epic, because I'm really cold on GW at the moment. I think the rules are going to be shit.
You 3D print one army and suddenly you're all like, GW were bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the Goonhammer Heresy event like made me like Heresy again, because that was that's the other talk about doing stupid things. Rather than bring along an army I already have painted, I was like, oh, I'm not liking Heresy at the moment, so I'm gonna totally invest in a new army, so I can decide with this 1 weekend event whether I want to bin Heresy out of my life or not. Like a fucking moron. I don't know. I'd like it to be good. I really want it to be good, but I'm not answering the question here. What would I like it to do? I would like it to have a more interesting scope, where it isn't just doing the same stuff we've seen a lot from GW, which is like micro unit control, micro stuff, where, you know, a lot of the rules are focused on micro. I would like to see an expansion. So maybe 30k Apocalypse, that's what I'd like to say, where it's high level macro stuff and you're pushing loads of tiny dudes around, fucking millions of the bastards. That's what I want.
Nice. Get that 2mm scale Warhammer. My answer's kind of similar. I just don't care. I don't really. Like, I was super excited about the idea of Epic coming back for about 15 minutes, and then the more I've thought about it, the more I've just come like, oh, I don't really care. I think in terms of how, like, I hope it's successful. I hope they just replicate, like, the 30k ranges that they have. I like that they're doing, like, little plastic versions of all of the like Solar Auxilia stuff, and I guess maybe to turn it around, the way I would like to see it expand is that I would like that to be reflected into plastic ranges for those other armies in big Heresy, so that people can stop paying like £35 for five little resin guys.
Yeah.
That's probably a low ball.
Any thoughts, Nick?
Yeah, I guess like I was interested in LI, but more to do with kind of because it's a small scale war game than anything to do with the setting. I don't really care about Marines. I do not care for the doing of the Marine, and I'm very happy for people that do. It's just not my cup of tea. So I was kind of interested in it just in the sense that like it's a small scale war game made by Games Workshop, which means that the models will probably be quite nice and it will be fairly easy to get hold of and stuff like that. But I'm kind of having that tiny itch scratched, as it were, by Warmaster currently. So I guess just in terms of how I wanted to see it expand, similar to what Rich was saying, I would just like to see it do quite well and then maybe see maybe a more mainstream turn towards small scale wargaming. I think 28 mil is very much the scale that everything is for, you know, Infinity, for obviously all the Games Workshop stuff, and I think it would just be cool to see more people playing with scale and playing with like different ideas of representing bigger forces on the table.
I really wanted a new old world to be 15 mil or smaller.
That would have been cool. Yeah, that would have been really interesting.
But so yeah, that's the answer. What should Epic, how should Epic 30K expand? The answer not being 40K, it's that we think it should be Warmaster. That's
right. Yeah, I'd play the hell out of AOS Warmaster. That'd be amazing.
Oh, AOS Warmaster. Oh yeah,
good too. Sorry, if you had AOS Warmaster, you could have the city's metaliths, like the floating stones, moving across the battlefield.
Yeah, that'd be sick. Sorry, I had to go and rescue my burger from the delivery man.
Next question, then, so you can eat your burger.
I'll read this one, if you like.
Okay, yeah.
What bit of hobby really inspired you? Not just a thing you liked a lot, but a thing that made you want to emulate it or do something different from before? That is from Michael.
Cool, that's a really good question. That's such a good question. I think maybe this is a bit trite, but going around Warhammer World and looking at some of the heavy metal miniatures, because it's a style I love, is a thing that really made me go, like, I want to be able to do this, or I want to be able to do closer to this. In particular, Darren Latham's Sanguinor is just like a masterclass in that GW style, not particularly realistic, non-metallics. I think that's so good. I still love looking at that in person. It's just crazy.
True. I'm trying to think if I ever noticed it. I'm often quite bored by the time I get to the 40k section, so not paying as much attention. I don't know if I have anything that inspired me hobby-wise. If it's not just a thing you liked a lot, but a thing that made you want to emulate it, or I've certainly copied lots of people's styles and tried to do it, but that, a lot of that's just sort of educational. I don't know.
You often talk to me passionately about Roman LaPlatte.
I do.
I had to make sure I didn't put a comma in the wrong place in that sentence, because if I just left it, you often talk to me passionately. New podcast lore. I know you love Roman LaPlatte's work. I don't know whether you'd claim that was inspirational or...
No, maybe. I certainly don't do... I don't do the stuff he does. I'm not trying to... I don't know if it's ever changed. I mean, there you go. The answer's actually behind me on the wall, which is it's not a hobby thing that's inspired me, but I really like Sargent's work. The way Sargent uses light and the way Sargent uses brushstrokes and the way Sargent uses detail, I would really, really like to be able to replicate into hobby things. So yes, that's probably... That's my answer, yeah.
I guess similar to Drew, I don't know that I necessarily have an answer for like something that specifically made me want to emulate it or do something different. I guess my kind of cop-out answer is not anything specific, but just the kind of breadth of hobby. Like, if for any given model or any given miniature that you want to paint, you will often find, you know, obviously there's hundreds of people who've painted the same model out there. But in particular, it's really nice to see if you know, when the, a good example of this actually is the Warhammer Community Showcase, when they get the community painters in to do a new model, you know, with the new Cities range, for example, and just seeing how people have taken one model and pushed it in different directions is always really, really cool. Because it's a chance to see kind of how different techniques applied to the same model have drastically different results. And so, yeah, I don't know if I can necessarily pick, like, oh, this painter in particular has inspired me. But just to think about, just going through those showcases, I'm often seeing, like, oh, I really like the way they've done that cloth. I might take that, kind of like some hobby gremlin, like stealing bits from various places. A hobby magpie, I guess.
Nice. Cool.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, very good.
So we've gone full circle on the questions by the looks of it, and this question comes from Wham Badger, and the question is, can you power through loving games and models, having a nostalgic relationship to a previous version of it, if you don't like the previewed rules for the game and are ambivalent about the setting, mentioning no names in brackets?
I wonder what he could be talking about.
We're talking about Epic again.
Yeah. I mean, my answer for this is no. Like, I don't think you can, and I don't think you should.
Yeah, no? I would agree. I'm totally going to get the Epic box so I can paint a tiny tank. So I guess you can. It's the answer, because I'm going to do it. But am I going to power through?
Are you going to power through and play it, or are you just going to treat it as a model to paint?
No, I'm gonna pass.
Hundreds of models to paint.
I've got a load of Knights and Titanica stuff, so if nothing else, it will just be based. No, I want to do Solar Auxiliary Army, and I'm not going to do that in 30k. So, yeah. That's the answer. There you go. That's the smart answer. Because you find part of it that you like, and you can sell yourself on. Mm-hmm. So for me, I want to do a load of really shit humans who are just there to get killed by literally everything on the table. And that will be my reward for pushing through with Epic. Nice.
I don't know how I feel about this. I mean, experience says no, I can't, basically. Like Heresy, I love the aesthetic of Heresy. I love, like, the lore, the novels especially. I think a load of the models are amazing. And I just don't like the game at all. I was having a conversation with someone the other day. I think my thoughts on the game are quite complex. That's very self-congratulatory, isn't it? It's like, my thoughts are very complex. I'm not going to tell you them, but they are. Believe me. Believe you me. Complex thoughts. A lot of thoughts in this head.
I mean, I'm totally there with you, because I have the same issues with 40K and Age of Sigmar.
Yeah. Sorry, I totally cut you off there, Drew. Sleepy brain.
Just going to say, it's like, yeah, I love the models. The lore is interesting, but it's like both the games I really don't like.
Yeah.
And
I think a lot of issues for me with Heresy stem from, like, I had a big Heresy army from first edition Heresy. I wasn't, like, an old hat, but I'd had it a couple of years and built it every couple of years. And the changes in the second edition, A, it didn't change in the way I wanted it to. It didn't go the direction I wanted it to. That's fine. That's just a game designer's decision. But also, the ways it changed impacted my specific army, which was an Iron Warriors army, basically just full of elites and heavy support choices. It like completely blindsided it and made it so I couldn't run any of the Legion rites I wanted to, because I'd previously been running in Pride of the Legion, and now
the change is that you can only have one heavy support in the Pride of Allegiance list. And it, the other thing I might have done, which was like a drop, the drop assault list. Mm-hmm. In first edition, you could also take anything in Terminator armor and it would get a teleport homer, basically. It would get a deep strike rule for that list, and you can't do that anymore. Which just meant, like, any list I wanted to run, I would have had to paint and buy a load of new stuff. Which is just unfortunate. It's happened to most people who've been in a hobby for a long time. Like, an edition changes of one of their armies is unfortunately nixed a bit. So I do occasionally look at the setting and think, like, oh, I still really want to paint Dark Angel's army, but it is going to be exactly that, like, powering through the ambivalence towards the game to do a hobby project. I think that's what Old World might end up being for me as well. So I think it's possible. I don't necessarily think it's advisable. If you have got something you're really passionate about, paint the stuff that you like and don't feel like it's a slog to do. Like,
yeah, I think for me, the thing that the question hinges on, right, is the nostalgia factor. Where if it is specifically something that you have, like, as many people do, if you have fond memories of Epic and you are constantly in your head being like, this is not Epic, then, you know, like, that way discourse lies, right? Then you're doing YouTube faces of people because you're kind of...
It's not the thing you've imagined.
You know, like... Head.
Yeah.
Exactly. It is not the thing that you've built up in your head based on a game that you remember playing 20 years ago. And I think that that will ultimately just lead to kind of disappointment in yourself and hobby left unfinished. Like, if you love the models, by all means, absolutely go through, do it for that reason. But I think if you're specifically like, can I trick myself into liking something? The answer is probably
no. Don't do it.
No.
I've been there. Trick myself into liking Kings of War by buying some of their latest models, and boy, I still hate those models. So
I've painted some Kings of War stuff, and yeah, they're not great.
Great game, so. Fantastic game. Dog shit models.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mantu. That's a bit harsh.
At least we've got the show title.
Yeah, I mean, fantastic game, dog shit models. I want to be clear that is unfair. That's reactionary, but like, there's been some guff in their range in the past, and some of that has not yet been replaced. Most of the new plastic models they make are a huge upgrade and quite nice. Just don't like, it turns out, building tiny skeletons very much if they're not kind of one piece.
No, I'm looking at some models now. No, I think they're dog shit.
Oh, God. We've turned ourselves into the Bad Boy Warhammer podcast.
We've had lots of, like, interesting takes and well-thought-through discussions. So
there goes that sponsorship.
Yeah, it's all going to shit now. Right, I am going to draw a line under this and say...
Kill it.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We're glad you could join us this evening, or whenever you're listening to it, but I'm always going to say this evening because I can't exist outside the current time period that I'm in. It's dark outside, therefore it's evening. So I hope you enjoyed this wherever you are and whatever you're doing. So joining me tonight, as before, was Rich. Do you have anything to plug, Rich, or any social medias people can find you on?
You can follow me on Twitter at Rich Nutter. You can follow me on Blue Sky at richn.bsky.social, and you can follow me on Instagram at rjnutter. They're all different, isn't that good?
Brand
you
identity.
Should also go check out my other podcast, which is called 3 and 2, and it's a match play Age of Sigmar podcast, and it is, the latest episode is up on the Tiny Plastic People feed, but it has also just moved to its own feed called 3 and 2, a Match Play Age of Sigmar podcast. Please go follow us, like us, review us. Do those for this podcast as well.
Nah, don't bother.
Ah, fuck it. We always tout the email address as well, but I'll say, I've used my segment to say, like, we've obviously done some big reckons about, like, things, especially when we were talking about historicals, and if any of that has, like, affected you, and you, or you want to disagree with us or
tell us that we were right, which seems unlikely.
Go to the Goonhammer comments.
Go to goonhammer.com. please do email us, because, you know, ultimately people improve by learning. So if you think that we're all way off base, just, you know, let us know. We can have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
Sorry, Nick, where can we find you?
You can also find me on Blue Sky, the cool new social media that everybody is talking about, at archeonic.bsky.social, that's archeonick, or as Roxin on the Discord for our friendly community, which is discord.gg/rollmodels, rollmodels.
And how about you, Drew? Where are you on the internet?
Not on Blue Sky. That's where I am.
Do you want an invite? I've got loads.
I've got so many fucking codes. We've got to pump those numbers up.
Fine. You might be able to find me on Blue Sky, but I don't know what my username's going to be. So just search for All the Drews, and whichever is the really cool one is me. Nice. You can also find me on Drew_paints on Instagram, where I sporadically post. And that's it. You can find me if you wander around the streets of England shouting my name, and I might hear you. But if you're doing that, I'm definitely going to pretend that's not me, and I'm going to ignore you because you look like a nutter.
What's wrong with that?
Take your name in vain.
Nutter slander.
I have kept under a lid that Rich has been wearing a baseball cap all podcast, and it has made me feel like he's the one who's going to lay down some, like, raw truths about vaccines and things, but
I'll be honest, putting on a trucker cap on does turn me very American. I don't have an issue with baseball. Self-conscious about my hairline.
That's
the main issue.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of photos of me from last weekend for this class I was on, and I'm like, God, am I fat and bald?
Jesus. Well, this has been 2 hours of hobby positivity.
Said hobby positivity. Yeah. Nothing about body positivity.
Podcast.
That was it. Yeah, that's where you can find me on the internet.
Tiny Plastic Pals on Instagram and Twitter, and I think Blue Sky now. I think it's also Tiny Plastic Pals. Or email thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com. Those are it, right?
That's
those are
it.
Our things. Yeah. Those are the socials.
That's it. We've done a pod.
Well done. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
No shit, we can't use that sign off. That's copyrighted.
Bloody sod you for listening. There we go.
Yeah. Go paint.
Go paint. But don't get stressed out and don't paint hate
go
symbols.
Paint.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Two rules for life. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.